Níor Gaillard. Hello everyone, wherever you may be, and Cead Míle Fáilte. You're very welcome to our History and Community Programme, brought to you by Dublin North Bay Tourism, here on Near 90.3 FM, and we're also available worldwide on the web, near.ie. Well, we're into the month of July, and I was just looking at the origin of the July name and that, and July was originally the fifth month of the old Roman calendar, and was called Quintiles. Later the name Julius was given to it in honour of Julius Caesar, who was born this month. Now the Anglo-Saxon name was Moed, M-O-E-D, Monad, or Mead month, from the fact that the meadows were in full bloom. July has several Irish names, these being Mí na Súil Buí, the month of the yellow eyes. These refer to the yellow blossoms of certain weeds common among potatoes. Mí Croighean na Maelbhog was another, the shaking out of the wallet or bag, the bags which held the last remnants of flour and meal from the previous harvest. They were shaken out, the scraps used, and the bags laid out for the new season. Now, of course, in Ireland of old, we were so dependent on the potato. Potatoes were the main crop and source of food, and by July, the old crop had run out, would have run out, would be exhausted, and the new ones were not yet well ready. So that was known to many people as Am an Gcoitinneas, in other words, time of want or scarcity. There's a saying in County Waterford that says, July of the cabbage, July of the onion dip, because there was no potatoes, August of the new potatoes. The third name for July was Mí na Meagán, the month of the green flies. In the heat of the summer, the green flies attacked the plants and often caused quite a lot of damage. And of course, the green fly hurdles the start of the fishing season as well. Nowadays, we simply call July Mí Uail. Now, our message to everyone, now that we're in high summer, is that to go out and visit the many interesting places in our North Dublin Bay tourism area. That is between the Serene Custom House and rugged Howth Head. The whole area is an Aladdin's cave of attractions, as we have been pointing out regularly on this programme. It's a treasure house, a museum in maritime surrounds. Why not be a pretend visitor or a tourist for a day and go out in your own North Dublin Bay area? Get to know the Customs House, Conley Station, the Five Lamps, Crow Park, Tolka Park, the Royal Canal, the Sean O'Casey Theatre, Clontarf Castle, the old graveyards, Clontarf, Kilbarrick, St. Fintan's. Above all, do some of the myriad of walks available, such as the Grand Canal Walk, beginning at Newcomen Bridge on the North Strand Road. Visit and walk St. Anne's Park, the Bull Island, and there are numerous trails around Sutton and Howth Head, and you can always make up your own. And what about a boat trip across Howth Harbour to Ireland's Eye? So our message is clear. We urge you all to get out and about and explore this wonderful North Dublin Bay area. And every place has a story, a history. Now, before I get to our main programme, I usually recall a few anniversaries that happened since our last programme a week ago. And I'll recall a few today. The author and Irish patriot Erskine Childers, he was born in London on July the 25th, 1870. He became a member of Dáil Éireann in 1921, and he was a delegate on the Anglo-Irish delegation that negotiated the Anglo-Irish Treaty of 1921. And he brought the famous arms into Howth. Remember the Howth gunrunny? We did a programme on that. Well, it was his yacht, the Ashgard, that took those arms into Howth. And his son, also called Erskine, later became President of Ireland. William Martin Murphy, that name should ring a bell with Dubliners in particular, businessman and founder of independent newspapers. Well, he died on June the 25th, 1919. Cork-born Murphy was the main protagonist against James Larkin and the trade unions, and was central to causing the infamous lockout in Dublin in 1913. Dublin-born investigative journalist, this is a more modern one, Veronica Gearon. She was shot dead on June the 26th, 1996. She lived dangerously, investigating and writing about Dublin's most notorious criminals. And a famous Wexford revolutionary, Bagnall Harvey, a United Irishman leader. He was hanged on June the 26th for his activities in 1798. And the great Irish political leader, Charles Stuart Parnell, who was born at Avondale in County Wicklow. He was born on June the 27th, 1846. He became an MP and soon became leader of the Irish Party at Westminster. He went on to be president of the Land League and fought manfully in the British House of Commons for Irish Home Rule. However, the Kitty O'Shea divorce scandal ruined him. And Jeremiah O'Donovan Rossa, another name that will ring a bell with many, nationalist and revolutionary. He died in New York on June the 30th, 1915. Cork-born, he became a leading Fenian, the American branch, where he was exiled after serving a severe six-year prison spell in England. Pádraig Pearse read a famous oration at his funeral, and that was in Glasnevin Cemetery. And many say that that oration began the real momentum towards the 1916 Rising. And I'll mention just two more. Guerrilla leader in the Irish War of Independence, General Tom Barry. He was born in Cork on July the 1st, 1897. He actually died on July the 2nd. So he was born on July the 1st and he died on July the 2nd. Now, he had major successes at the War of Independence with the West Cork Flying Column. And the last one today is St. Oliver Plunkett, the Archbishop of Armagh and martyr. He was hanged at Tyburn as long ago as July the 1st, 1681. He was canonised a saint on the 12th of October, 1975. And here's a fact that I had to read it a few times before I believed it. He was the only the second Irish person ever to be formally canonised. The other was St. Lawrence O'Toole of Dublin over 700 years earlier. You see, all our saints like St. Patrick, St. Bridget, St. Columbkill, they are saints by tradition. They were never actually canonised. And I couldn't believe that we had only two people ever canonised. And that was, as I say, Oliver Plunkett and Lawrence O'Toole. OK, on to our quiz now. And again, I'm glad to say that the response to our quiz is magnificent. It surprises me every week, but I'm delighted. And the questions, of course, are all connected with the North Dublin Bay tourist area. And the whole idea is to whet your appetite and highlight your interest in the North Dublin Bay tourist areas. We do two questions each week, and there's a prize of a book for the winner. Now, if you missed them, as I say, on the radio show or whatever, we'll have them up on Instagram and Facebook later. So, I'll start with the results of last week's quiz, first of all. And the first question last week was, the familiar landmark railway bridge across the Clontarf Road, close to its junction with the Howth Road at Fairview. It was constructed in 1843 and considered an engineering triumph at the time. The bridge is familiarly known by a few pet or nicknames, and we asked you to give us one of these names. Well, any of these names would have done. It's known as the Skew or Skewed Bridge. Now, skew means a bridge that's, if you like, oblique or slanting or sidewards. So that's why it's called the Skew Bridge. It's called the Embankment Bridge because the original lead-up from Conley Station across, that was across Dublin Bay at the time. There was no Fairview Park, so they had to build a huge embankment to get across to where that bridge is. It was also called, or is called, the Twin Arch, Double Arch, or Stone Arch Bridge. So there you are. Now, the second question last week was, what national All-Ireland sports body has recently moved its headquarters from Howth to the Sport Ireland campus at Abbottstown in West Dublin? Well, that's, of course, the Olympic Council of Ireland. OK, this week's two questions. In last week's programme, we mentioned trace or tip horses in connection with Dublin's old trams. But can you tell us what was a trace or a tip horse used for? Now, I'll read that question again. In last week's programme, we mentioned trace or tip horses, trace, T-R-I-S-E, tip, T-I-P, in connection with Dublin's old trams. But what was a trace or a tip horse used for? What was their purpose? The second question this week, who am I? I was born in Clontarf in 1847, and many say my mother's tales concerning the cholera were responsible for my great story. Now, I'll read that again. It's a who am I question. Born in Clontarf in 1847, many say my mother's tales concerning the cholera were responsible for my great story. And again, you can send your answers to Instagram at Dublin North Bay Tourism, or search Facebook Dublin North Bay Tourism again, or email us simply to dublinnorthbaytourism@gmail.com. And the Dublin North Bay Tourism, that's all one word in lowercase. Okay, well, before we go on to our next piece, we'll stop for a little bit of music. And we chose a little song this week, "But Love Should Be in the Air," now that we're all on holidays and so on. And this one is by an American songwriter, Brett Young, and it's called "In Case You Didn't Know."
Can't count the times I almost said what's on my mind, but I didn't. And just the other day I wrote down all the things I'd say, but I couldn't. I just couldn't. Baby, I know that you've been wondering. Goes nothing in case you didn't know. Baby, I'm crazy about you, and I would be lying if I said that I could live this life without you. Even though I don't tell you all the time, you had my heart a long, long time ago. In case you didn't know. That second glass of wine that did it. There was something about that kiss, girl, it did me in. Got me thinking, I'm thinking, all of the things that I've been feeling.
Okay, in case you forgot, more or less, I love you. That's a song I like very much. Now, we were talking last week about the old trams, and I didn't get quite to the end of our conversation. We were talking about the demise of the old trams. I know for younger listeners, I know the new trams are back, but we'll deal with that another day. And because what happened at the end was, in the 1920s and 30s, the diesel combustion engine, if you like, arrived, the buses and so on, and the bus could sort of zigzag in and out of the new little estates growing up, whereas the tram was stuck to its tracks, so the buses won out as regards getting the passengers. And so in May 1959, CIE amalgamated with the old Great Northern Railway Company, and the last of the trams left Nelson's Pillar on July the 9th, 1949. Now, younger listeners, again, they might say, well, what the hell was Nelson's Pillar? Well, it stood where the Spire is now today. Now, we said all the trams. One tram survived for a while, and that's one of the most famous of all trams, and I want to talk about it for a moment. Just one tram was to survive for another 10 years. This was the most famous of all Dublin trams. It was called the Hill of Howth Tram, and it's now a fond and iconic memory. It began operating in 1901, and the route was from Sutton Depot to Howth Summit. And even on that one, on May the 31st, 1959, CIE eventually pulled the plug and the services ceased. Now, this was the last tram to run in Ireland, the last of its type in that era. The Hill of Howth tram consistently proves to be a lively topic of conversation, with great general interest in it and the lore that surrounds it. Indeed, it has been the subject of many booklets and articles. And many of you might recall, the older listeners anyway, broadcaster Gabe Byrne interviewing fellow broadcaster Joe Linnane. He interviewed him aboard that tram on its very last journey over Howth Hill. It was the number 9, for the record, and those of you who know your trams, it was from the Hill Fleet. And the two had a conversation, that is, Gabe Byrne and Joe Linnane, as the tram wound its way from Sutton through and over Howth Village, up the hill, around the summit, and back down again. And that was more or less the end of the trams as we knew them. Now, that Hill of Howth tram, just for the record, it actually had a predecessor, a farmer on East Mountain in Howth, called John O'Brien. He had an O'Brien, the vis-a-vis, as they were known. He operating on the Hill of Howth since 1867. This was a horse-drawn bus with a capacity for 14 passengers, and it operated between Sutton and Howth Summit. Now, I just want to add a few little snippets about, you know, the transport generally, as we close down on that particular subject. When we talked about early transport, obviously we were talking about walking Shanksmere to the donkey, to the horse, and the horse and carriage and so on. One we didn't mention was the invention of the bicycle. Now, the bicycle, which came into common use in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, it helped make places more accessible. The problem with transport at the time was getting to places. The roads were terrible, and even when with the trams in the Dublin city, well, that was okay, but we're talking about the rest of the country as well, it was just awful. Now, the bicycle, again, like the bus, it wasn't stuck to a track like the tram. So the bike gave you a certain freedom, and you could meander off the main thoroughfares. Or indeed, if you like, you weren't stuck with stabling and feeding a horse or a donkey. Now, road and railway engineer William Dargan, that's the name that will, a lot of people involved in railways and in transport and in the history and all that will recall, because he's known as the father of Irish railways. His years were 1799 to 1867. Now, William Dargan, he oversaw the construction of the Dublin to Drogheda Railway in October 1840. And I'm going to talk about that more in a moment. With engineer Sir John McNeill directing operations, the familiar Clontarf landmark known as the Stone Arch Bridge, which we've just talked about in the quiz, it was constructed as part of the embankment coming through Fairview Park. And again, it was regarded as a huge engineering triumph at the time. Now, it's noteworthy that both Dargan and McNeill, that William Dargan and the engineer McNeill, John McNeill, they assisted Thomas Telford, which we've I mentioned earlier in an earlier programme. They helped him with the construction of the Howth Road. And many people say that without this triumvirate, we may never have found our way to Howth. So, I don't know. And incidentally, in the 1850s, Dargan lived in Maryville House, which is near St. Paul's College, and his estate house as it became part of St. Anne's Park later on. And a statue, if you're in town, a statue to Dargan stands on the lawn of the National Gallery in Merrion Square. Now, something else I'd like to mention about the railways in Clontarf. I mentioned the building of the embankment from Tolka to Clontarf. That paved the way for the reclamation of the area now known as Fairview Park. Now, the embankment was constructed, as we said, in the 1840s, and Fairview Park eventually was finally completed in around 1915, so it was a long way away still. Now, the bridge and embankment destroyed what was called the Fairview, which is what Fairview got its name from, the Fairview out along the coast, and the embankment blocked access to the once popular strand at Clontarf and Fairview. Now, the entire embankment, which incidentally was built laboriously by horse and hand, it was completed by the end of 1843. And in May 1844, as I've mentioned, the line from Dublin to Drogheda was formally opened and launched into service. Now, ironically, in its very first year of service, the embankment had to withstand its most severe test. The great storm which hit Dublin Bay on October the 9th, 1844, and literally washed away the old Clontarf Island, it really tested the endurance of the line and the Skew Bridge in its very first early years. Now, both came through unscathed. Now, between 1844 and 1850, a train station actually operated at Clontarf. And in 1849, 11 trains served Clontarf daily. But that closed in 1850. In 1897, on the site known as the Black Quarry on the Howth Road, Clontarf railway station proper was built, and it was finally opened in 1898 by the Great Northern Railway Company. Now, this was no doubt, this was in recognition of the fact that Clontarf was now a fast-expanding suburb. The station was known as simply Clontarf Halt, and it passed most of its life as a quiet suburban station. But on the night of December the 8th, 1954, after a day of incessant rain and strong wind, the railway bridge spanning the Talca River at the East Wall Road, that was swept away and the Talca River burst its banks. Now, this blocked access to Amiens Street Station, and overnight, the quiet Clontarf Station became a major rail terminal, as all trains from the north were routed there. For the next few weeks, more passengers passed along Clontarf's single wooden platform than it had witnessed in its lifespan until then. On January the 5th, 1955, the rushing and busy schedule at Clontarf ended, as the railway bridge over the Talca was again put in place, erected, and trains once more were able to use Amiens Street. Clontarf railway station resumed its peaceful suburban life, but not for long, because on September the 2nd, 1956, the 1110 train from Howth to Amiens Street stopped at Clontarf, and this was to be the last train to use the station, as the next day, September the 3rd, 1956, the Clontarf station closed down permanently. Now, one historic stop at Clontarf took place during the 1916 Rising, at Easter 1916, of course. Now, as food in the Clontarf area was running out and fresh supplies were not coming through due to the breakdown of services during the Rising, a heavily laden food train arrived at Clontarf station from Belfast, carrying generous supplies of bread, flour, bacon and many other varieties of food. The gesture from the people of Belfast was much appreciated by Clontarf people. And where was the station? You might assume it was where the Dart station is today. It wasn't, actually. Today is number 94 Howth Road, beside the railway bridge on the Howth Road, was the station building, complete with ticket office and waiting room. And that's just across the road from the old Hollybrook Hotel. And the adjoining house, number 96, was the station master's residence. And the little green gate, just on the city side of number 94, that was the entrance that led to the station. And so Clontarf had to wait until the coming of the Dart, before it again had a railway station. Now, generally speaking, the coming of the railway system changed so much, even time itself, because before the coming of railways, there was no standard time. Each area, town or village, kept its own time, and Irish time was about half an hour behind English time. Now, railway time, or the standard time, was first introduced in England in November 1840. This was the first known occasion when various local times were synchronised and a common standard time adopted. Railway time was necessary to keep the timetables on schedule, and for some time, a clock was actually sent from London to Dublin's ballast office. Now, when I talk about changes in that, another big change that the coming of the railways brought was the railway also spelt the death knell for the old toll roads, and especially the toll road which connected the city with Malahide by way of Fairview and Raheny. All toll roads ceased to exist in Dublin in 1855, having lasted 69 years since they were first introduced in 1786. Now, a poignant and kind of a sad memory from the early years of the trams was that because of widespread illiteracy, the Dublin Tramway Company used symbols to indicate the destination of trams. For example, the Dollymount tram's daytime sign was a green shield, while at night two green lights were used. And we talked about the coming of the buses. Well, the very first route in Dublin, the first bus route, came in 1925. And it was from the city centre to Kilchester. It was a single-decker and it was numbered 43. Now, between 1980 and 1984, the railway line between Howth and Bray was modernised and electrified to herald the arrival of the Dart. The Dart, to those of you who might be new to it, it's short for Dublin Area Rapid Transit. And it began operating in 1984. And trams finally had their second coming and came back on Dublin streets in 2004. Now, of course, today's trams are very, very unlike the trams of old. The carriages are very different, and the system, called the Lewis Dublin Light Rail System, it's modern, fast, and very, very efficient. Well, I went to do a last piece on, because somebody asked me in an email to do a little piece on the famous Bianconi cars and coaches, but I don't think we'd have time to go into it on this programme, but I promise you I'll do it next week. Bianconi, the Italian who introduced these cars, he was actually more or less the first to organise any kind of formalised general traffic in rural Ireland. So I leave Charles for another day. I'll just remind you that if you want to get in touch with us for any reason, our email is dublinnorthbaytourism@gmail.com. Don't forget to enter our quiz and we'll be in touch with the winner of last week's quiz. And if you want to listen back to our programmes, this is my last announcement. Simply, some people say, well, could we listen to such a programme again? You can. Just Google Near FM, go to Listen Again, go to Search and type in History and Community, or indeed my name, Dennis McIntyre. And with that, you've been listening to the History and Community programme. I will say, until we meet again next week, slán go fóill.